DW Africa Link.
Zimbabwe is facing one of its most serious constitutional fights in years, and it could have a huge impact on the country's political system. Public hearings have begun on a proposed constitutional amendment that critics say is designed to keep President Emmerson Mnangagwa in power beyond 2028. The atmosphere is already tense, with arrests, harassment, allegations, and fears that dissent is being squeezed out of the process. It feels like deja vu, doesn't it? So what really is going on? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
All right, let's get back to the matter. Zimbabwe adopted its current constitution in 2013 after years of political crisis and negotiations. The new charter introduced key democratic safeguards, including presidential term limits of 2 5-year terms, stronger checks and balances, an expanded Bill of Rights, and more independent institutions. These reforms were designed to prevent prolonged rule like that of former President Robert Mugabe, who governed the country for 37 years. That's why any attempt to change term limits is highly sensitive and closely watched. Let's get more from Namatai Kwekweza, activist and regional director, We Lead Africa. That's a youth leadership development and advocacy organization in the Southern African region. I also have DW's Columbus Mavunga, our correspondent in Zimbabwe. Hello to both of you. Namatai, what exactly does the proposed constitutional amendment change?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. And there are basically six things that will be focused on with regards to these amendments. The first thing is the power grab, which is the extension of term limits. So the bill proposes extending presidential and parliamentary terms from 5 to 7 years. And this allows government to expand mandate by an additional 2 years without fresh voter approval from 2023. And also parliament unilaterally extends its own life, risking never holding elections again. The second thing is, sidestepping the people. That's basically dodging the referendum. So, you know, our constitution section 328 requires a public referendum if an amendment benefits those currently in office. This bill uses the notwithstanding clause to bypass this legal safeguard. And basically, it sets a precedent where any other right, including in the declaration, that's chapter 4 of our Bill of Rights, can be ignored as people can use the notwithstanding clause to be able to bypass the people's referendum. The third thing is that it's killing the popular vote. So indirect elections, which we were not doing before, are being proposed, removing the direct vote for the president, and the president would be elected by parliament. And this basically distances the leader from the consent of the people and opens the door for plutocracy or kleptocracy politicians brought from behind closed doors. The next thing that it's doing, this is the fourth thing, is rigging the Senate, the 30% controlling majority. So the bill adds 10 unelected senators, appointed by the president, and removes the requirement for chiefs to be nonpartisan. So chiefs in our country are mandated by the current constitution to be nonpartisan, but this would actually, in essence, allow them, to actually be partisan. And a party, could secure a controlling majority with only 30% in the Senate without an actual vote. And this is fundamentally problematic. So the executive ensures that it can pass any future law without true opposition through appointments. And then the next thing is the fifth thing, which is the weakening independence, particularly capturing elections and justice. So it strips the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, that we call ZAC, of key roles and gives the president more control over judges. So the voter registration and boundaries, particularly we call that in the delimitation process, redrawing moves to bodies appointed solely by the president. And this can open doors for what we call gerrymandering in the United States, where basically you redraw the boundaries to ensure that you have more seats even if you have less people. And fundamentally, that adds to how the president is elected by parliament, because the more seats you have, because it's now an indirect election of the president. So if they get more seats, it allows you to actually become president, even though you are doing that by redrawing the boundaries. And this also removes institutional safeguards and makes election referees, unaccountable, to us, the people of the country. The final thing that they are doing is they are silencing accountability and abolishing commissions. Because right now, as a country, we are going through, what I would call an epidemic with regards to the relapse of the rights of women and fundamentally also issues around gender-based violence. So these are some of the critical things that the amendments will definitely be looking into. Thanks.
No, thank you. I mean, you have given us some good education and information about, what is really at stake here. Of course, one of the major things making headlines is the fact that, once again, presidential term limits are likely to be removed if this goes through. And of course, every term is now going to be extended for an extra 2 years, which will move it from 5 to 7. Critics are calling this some sort of power grab. Sounds like a deja vu to me from back in the day when the late former president Robert Mugabe was still in power, right? Or am I stretching when I say this, Namatai?
So your perspective is very accurate in the sense that this is a script that has been written so many more times before within the context of Zimbabwe. I think definitely there are similarities with the former president. However, we need to also realize that this could actually be worse in the sense that when you look at Mugabe, during his 37 years in power, he amended the constitution a total of about 17 times. And when you look at now this particular president, we had Amendment Bill number 1 in 2017, which made 27 changes to the constitution and fundamentally was attacking judicial independence. We also then had Constitutional Amendment Bill number 2, which had 38 amendments that were made to the constitution. And we have now Amendment Bill number 3, which is 23 changes being made. And we are not even calculating the consequential, which we call the knock-on amendments that will come as a result of these particular amendments. So the reality of the matter is Mugabe, in his 37-year rule, only changed the constitution a total of 17 times. But this particular leader, in less than 10 years, has amended the constitution, has made more than 100 changes to the constitution within the context of these three bills. So definitely, it is a power grab. And when we look at the sections that they are targeting, Section 91, Section 95, Section 143, Section 158, all of these are sections that are focused on ensuring that the president is able to consolidate his power, but fundamentally is able to extend his mandate without deriving an executive authority from the people of Zimbabwe.
Right. Thank you very much, Namatai, for really digging deep into this for us. Columbus, I'm going to come to you because, knowing all of this, I'm just wondering what the reaction is on the ground. What are people saying? How are people overall reacting to this? Critics, supporters?
I think the supporters of ZANU-PF, the ruling ZANU-PF, which drafted these constitutional amendments, they are happy, or that's what they're saying publicly. I've been to three public hearings so far. It seems as everything is choreographed. ZANU-PF, they are raising their hands with three fingers up and the other one like they are proving something. So then you are picked and say, we are for this amendment number 3. They are saying it will bring political and economic stability. They are giving us figures that should we abolish some of these commissions, it will save millions of dollars and that money will be used to repair roads and for development and etc. And if you happen to stand up and say something opposing, and this is my experience from the three meetings that I've talked about, people boo you, and after the meeting, you will have people following you, telling you the importance of the liberation, the importance of ZANU-PF, and so forth. So those who are opposed, they are saying, it's fine. It's democracy to change the constitution, but why are we allowing the ZANU-PF to change the constitution without taking it to the referendum? The last the constitution that came in 2013 was approved by a referendum. They are saying if you are happy with the proposed changes, let's go to the people. Everyone should have a say in this. You can't have the parliament coming with this bill and then the parliament approves it without people's input.
And talking about people's opinions on this, of course, the public hearings have begun. What has been the mood on the ground and how are people reacting to the public hearing? How is it going so far?
There's a huge turnout and it's largely ZANU-PF, even in opposition strongholds. It's mainly ZANU-PF which is bussing in people. I don't know whether they are coming voluntarily or not. These meetings, it's largely people who are pro the constitution amendment. I don't know with the time we'll see as we get to other areas to see whether some people who are against the bill will freely talk.
There's been some reports of intimidation, harassment. Is that the situation during the public hearings or what's it like?
I witnessed people being intimidated, including journalists that have said that they don't want to be mentioned for, I don't know, whatever reason. But they were being harassed for interviewing people who were talking against the bill, the amendment bill. And so people are being coerced to speak pro the constitution. If you speak against it, you might have some visitors accompanying you home when the public hearing is done.
Right. Thank you very much, Columbus. I'm going to come back to you, Namatai, because it seems that the government, from what you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're trying to find some sort of legal path forward to try to make this work, however controversial it may be. But the implications when this goes through will be immense. And I want you to share some of that with us. What are the risks, for example, when we talk about Zimbabwe's democracy if the amendment passes?
Thanks so much. So, you know, the reality of the matter is they are not doing anything with regards to following the procedural aspects of how this must be done properly. So this is a very butchered process. And procedurally, like even when we talked about the referendum in itself, they are looking for ways to actually bypass a lot of the things that are procedurally correct. So you are looking at a process that is flawed. But I think the substantive question, you know, substantively speaking, what they are doing with regards to the long-term effects on the society of what we call Zimbabwe is actually pretty catastrophic. So the one thing I want to revert back is to something that Columbus was saying, that, look, this constitution, the 2013 constitution, is a constitution that 3.3 million Zimbabweans participated in a referendum with a 94.4% voting yes to the particular constitution being put in place in 2013. And for us to get to where we have gotten, there are people who died, there are people who were tortured, abducted, who disappeared, for us to actually have this constitution, which might not be perfect, but is definitely better than what we had. It is a constitution that has not been fully realized and implemented with regards to its potential. It is a constitution that is still not aligned to a significant amount of laws in the country. And yet, even amongst all of these situations, it is now already being amended. So, with regards to the to the democratic future of the country, we need to actually understand who has the most time to leave under whatever arrangement is going to come out of this particular amendment. And in this context, it is young people. It is young people who have lived in a Zimbabwe where they do not have access to clean drinking water in urban areas. It is young people who are watching the healthcare system collapse to a point where nurses were striking just about a week ago and are promising to continue striking. It is the young people who are now entering a Zimbabwe that has depleted education systems. The quality of education has significantly gone down. It is the young people who have dreams, hopes, and aspirations that will never be realized and will have to leave in a Zimbabwe that is so difficult that they would rather cross the crocodile-infested Limpopo River into South Africa to leave there as illegal migrants. So when you have all of these down, you must understand that the socioeconomic conditions that young people find themselves leaving under is dire. You know, people can tell you whatever they tell you, but the current socioeconomic conditions are not livable. And the fundamental question around the amendment of the Constitution is an inquisition into what is life going to be like. If you are going to extend a term limit, what are we extending the term limit for? Are we extending the term limit for more suffering? Are we extending the term limit, you know, for less of our rights, for less of our freedoms, for less of our dignity? Why do you want to extend the term limit to say that you want to finish work when you have been in government since 1980 and what you've managed to do is actually regress the country, not bring it forward? What additional time do you need to do what exactly? What do you want to finish? Do you want to finish the project of making young Zimbabweans leave in dignified lives? So this is something that we have to be cognizant of with regards to the living conditions of young people who have the longest time to be governed under whatever arrangement will emanate from this. The last thing that I wanted to say with regards to the democratic questions and how we organize ourselves as a democratic society, we can kiss free and fair elections goodbye. This is a consolidation, not just for an individual, but a political party, because the next person who will come after this particular individual to be the head of state of this country fundamentally will have the same machinery that allows them to stay for more than they are welcome. It is very important for us to understand that when you have weakened the independent commissions, when you are now using gerrymandering tactics, when you are now taking away the popular vote, it will be much harder for Zimbabweans, and particularly the Zimbabwean opposition, to ever get into power, and fundamentally for the people of our country to choose their own leaders for a very long time until perhaps we have another fight to change the constitution to ensure that, you know, the people of this country actually have free and fair elections. So these are some of the detriments of this particular arrangement. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Namatai. And Columbus, I am sure the government has been hearing all of these criticisms. How are they responding to it? Have they responded at all?
Yeah, the government seemed to have lubricated its propaganda machinery, if you want. They are all over the media, even so on social media. They are saying all these changes, they are not unique to Zimbabwe. They are giving an example of a president being elected by parliament. They're saying South Africa has got the same system. Why can't we adopt it, but we don't adopt everything that South Africans do? They are also saying the gender commission should be disbanded because there's the human rights commission. It's a duplication of roles, and that's money which is going for nothing. They have an answer to everything, and they are saying those people who are calling for a referendum, they don't know law. And surprisingly, when the proposal to extend Mnangagwa's stay in office started, those in ZANU-PF, they were saying there is no time for this because we need to go through two referendums. But now everything is quiet. Everyone is quiet, I'm sorry. They are now saying there's no need for a referendum, which some people are saying we should go through if there is no rigging involved in all these changes that are being proposed.
Right. And look, Zimbabwe has been in the spotlight in recent months. And to some extent, they were for some positive reasons. Lifting of sanctions by some European countries. And Zimbabwe also recorded some slight positive news when it comes to the economy compared to times before. And now, it seems, according to critics at least, that the country is going back to the time of Robert Mugabe, the late president Robert Mugabe, where based on how he was using his power, that it led to a lot of sanctions on Zimbabwe. So I'm just wondering, Columbus, what is likely to happen to all this positivity that some would argue is slowly happening to Zimbabwe with these changes that are happening?
Okay, I'll answer that, telling about what this senior, fairly senior guy said yesterday. He said he's in Cheguto, which is a ZANU-PF stronghold, and he's ZANU-PF. He said, we seem to be going backwards beyond where Mugabe was during the time of Ian Smith. Election of a prime minister would be done by a few people, and then people will be told, this is what we are going to have. We now have people extending their own term in office, including parliamentarians, without talking to the people. They're saying we are moving back to the colonial era. And all the gains that Zimbabwe might have gained over the past few years might actually be reversed. They're saying democracy is now at risk, and that this might call for new sanctions without using the word sanctions, but they're saying some people outside might call for some punishment on Zimbabwe.
Right. That's exactly what some critics expected. We're wrapping this up with you, Namatai. Final words. Look, it seems more likely that this amendment is going to go through. In the event that this amendment is approved, Namatai, what happens next?
So I think that the reality of the matter is we have to look at the material conditions of the people of our country. And I refer back to what you were saying that, Zimbabwe has been said to have like the fourth largest economy in the SADC, and that's an improvement. But the fundamental question is the systemic inequalities that keep the bulk of this population, and particularly young people, out of living dignified lives, out of the scope of living dignified lives, because they cannot access the very basics. So an amendment to this constitution means an extension of that, because the systemic issues that have nothing to do with the president overstaying his welcome in public office, the systemic issues that have everything to do with the lived realities and the material conditions of people have still not been addressed. And the structure and the system that still exists is basically a replication that keeps reproducing and manufacturing human misery and poverty for the everyday ordinary Zimbabwean. And this is likely what is going to happen when this amendment sells through. Things.
Is there any way out of this?
I mean, the reality of the matter is at this point, with regards to the progressive movements, be it from opposition to civil society and just generally social movements, we are out-organized. You know, it's not that ZANU-PF in itself, the ruling party, is good. It's just basically we are out-resourced and out-organized. And I do perceive that no matter the outcome, the people that have already begun to speak truth to power, that are resisting something that we know is wrong, the war veterans know is wrong, the people in ZANU-PF, at least those that have not been bribed, know that it's wrong. I think the reality of the matter is people should keep speaking truth to power, should keep showing up, and whatever is the imminent result or outcome of these processes should actually document that there are those who continued to resist something that was overtly morally unjustifiable and wrong. And this is my stance on this. And I do stand with everyone who has been, you know, courageous enough to keep showing up and to keep organizing in ways that they can to resist this particular amendment.
We definitely are going to keep our eyes and ears on this and on the ground with our correspondent. But very, very interesting and deep discussion for this. I've enjoyed every bit of it. Namatai Kwekweza, activist and regional director, We Lead Africa. That's a youth leadership development and advocacy organization in the Southern African region. And also many thanks to you, DW's Columbus Mavunga, our correspondent in Zimbabwe.
Thank you so much for having us. Have a blessed day.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
Public hearings are meant to be a democratic safeguard. But if opponents face intimidation while supporters campaign freely, the process risks being seen as performative rather than genuinely participatory. That could undermine trust, not just in the amendment process, but in Zimbabwe's broader political system. We will keep you posted on how things develop. Meanwhile, share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. and I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, Made for Minds.